What's up, everybody? It's Board Wrestling Fan Radio, episode number 19. You guys know the crew by now, right? It's myself, Think So Joe, along with my co-hosts, JT.
Hey.
And as always, Mr. G Hall.
Streak continues, 19, baby.
19. And, all right. I'm just looking for buttons to press here. All right. It's Board Wrestling Fan Radio, episode 19, and slow news week, wasn't it? For the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I caught a few things going on, but nothing that really jumped out at me.
Yeah.
A lot of people flipping out on Twitter, but that's pretty much a weekly occurrence, isn't it?
Right. Especially if your name is Scott Steiner.
Yeah, or Shane Helms today is like having war with everybody who's a UFC fan, apparently.
Really? I didn't catch that one.
Yeah, there's a thread up on Angry Marks. It's pretty long, so I don't think we're going to go through the whole thing.
I'm sure we're not, but shout out to angrymarks.com. How you guys doing?
Actually, even can't even talk much about Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor is in there. They're showing highlights of their showdown in the sun all to the last couple of weeks, so.
Yeah. I don't know. So what are we going to talk about then? I guess we start with Monday Night Raw.
Which, yeah, makes sense.
I don't even remember what happened, so I have to pull it up. And as soon as my internet decides to cooperate, I will.
It was in London. It was in England, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And we start off with CM Punk and Mark Henry, who is already in the ring. The crowd was hot. No, well, we've already read this.
We're just going to read the review to you. This was a good big man, little man match.
Oh, yeah.
Both guys really brought it. Nah, credit where it's due, though. I mean, it was a good match. Certainly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then Punk, then Jericho had a video. Jericho is apparently stalking Punk in England now. Because Punk apparently, if you have the text feed, which I need to text my Mania entry, I haven't done that in a while. But,
you know what? The entries for that are closed, actually.
Oh, well, I know it was every day for a while, so yeah. I didn't know if they stopped it yet. But, they had sent me, if you were part of the text club, they sent you a text at like 6 o'clock saying, Punk in a pub? Well, tonight he'd be CM Punk or CM Drunk.
Yeah, I actually got that text. I know exactly what you're talking about. And then they show Punk walking into a pub and walking back out. And Punk's like, so I went and had fish and chips with a friend. Who cares? And Jericho's trying to justify, oh, well, you could have went anywhere for fish and chips, but you had to come to a bar or a pub or whatever, you know. I don't know. I still hate the storyline. Go ahead.
I was reading a little later in the week. The funny thing is the restaurant, he was filmed going into, actually wasn't open for food at the point he went in there. It's really a shame if Jericho really wanted to allude to the gimmick of the storyline. That's what he should have pointed out. The kitchen was closed, Punk.
Right. It's funny to me because I've been protesting this every week on Board Wrestling Fan Radio, how much I can't stand this storyline because alcoholism is a serious thing. And then this week we got the whole Scott Hall thing. Or was that last week? I don't remember, but we had the whole Scott...
Yeah, it was last week.
Last week. We had the whole Scott Hall, getting drunk and beating his girlfriend or whatever, it's like... And we're still going on with this alcoholism thing. Like it's just some kind of joke. It's not a joke. It's a disease, So, this storyline still pisses me off. But the match was good. Give him credit for the match. Punk with the Randy Savage elbow drop with the chair.
Yeah. Yep.
To pick up the victory in the no DQ match. And then he finds out he's got the Chicago street fight this week. Not this week, but this month at the pay-per-view. Taking on Jericho, and he's like, well, I get to beat you up in front of my family? Okay, cool. Let's see, we had Santino defending against David Otunga, and
WWE, ask a Tonga to take a blood test. I want to know if he's pregnant.
Yeah. I kind of looked this over a little bit when I was doing the power poll last night. Thought that was kind of funny. All right. Brock Lesnar had his interview, and, you know, he talks like this, and, you know, but he's still a legit badass, so who cares?
I thought the video was awesome. I really
enjoyed absolutely.
The style of it and the way the production was felt very much like a UFC style promo, which is perfect for this, you know, the character he's playing now. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Lesnar's a, like I said, he's a legit badass, and he, but I mean, he's on there like, he'd be carrying my bags if I didn't leave. It's like, yeah, but you left, so he's not. But, you know, I mean, when he was around, Brock Lesnar was at the top of the company. I mean, he had that great main event at WrestleMania 19 where he almost killed himself, but still probably one of the best matches in WrestleMania history, if you ask me, not just because I was there, but because I really think so. Kane killed Zack Ryder again. Called out Randy Orton. Cena did a promo, and Johnny Ace came out and said, "Oh, you're going to wrestle my secret opponent." And we all knew it was Lord Tensai already, so.
I didn't know.
You didn't?
No.
I think the rest of us already kind of guessed that because he was supposed to be like the henchman for John Laurinaitis when he came back. Mm. Kofi and Daniel Bryan.
That was a great match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Daniel Bryan locked in the yes lock, because when he locks you in the move, you will be screaming yes, yes, yes when the referee asks you if you want to quit.
Boy, plus we got plenty of yes chants the whole night.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean,
they were definitely, that was definitely for a taped show that definitely was not pumped out. That was definitely not edited out. The yes chants were not edited out. Not. Can't say that about SmackDown, but definitely on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they really had the time, because I think they filmed it earlier in the day, and then they're just rushing it to air instead of sitting there trying to clean up all the yes chants and everything else. But Daniel Bryan is got to be the most over guy in the WWE. And, in fact, I'm looking at Justin's review right now. He said, on Facebook, somebody called Daniel Bryan the most over face in the WWE. Too bad the WWE wants him to be a heel. But it's true. I mean, he is the most over guy. You watched Raw the night after WrestleMania, and every single segment, there's people chanting yes, 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 yes. And they're chanting no when the guy they're rooting for is getting hit, and they're chanting C when the Spanish guy comes out. It's just, he is the most over guy in WWE right now, and I think losing in 18 seconds at WrestleMania really helped solidify that. Let's see, Eve is having a discussion with Johnny Ace, the Great Khali, and the Big Show faced the Colognes, and they won. And John Cena lost to Lord Tensai, and yeah, that was pretty much it. Any thoughts? Gee, thoughts on Raw?
Yeah, I had a few. I'm a little bit concerned about the future of Dolph Ziggler, not necessarily with the company, but how the crowd perceives him. As much as I you know, I love the Funkasaurus, I don't want to see Dolph being the guy who's getting fed to him. That, for me, that's backwards. It doesn't help.
That's right. There was a match between them on Raw, and Justin missed that in his review somehow. I think it was just that quick, wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically, it was... It was kind of a distraction, bit of a cluster schmoz in the ring, because you had the Funkettes kind of tangling up with Vicky, and it caused a distraction, and then, of course, you know, the distraction was capitalized on by the face.
But right.
I'm just concerned, because at some point here, if they don't start giving Dolph upward momentum, he's just going to be perceived as a mid-carder, and that's not good for the company at all, or for wrestling in general, because they need to be making guys... Just that was one of my main criticisms of the whole show. And I also, you know, go ahead. Yeah,
Dolph Ziggler is certainly one of the best talents that they have right now. I mean, even if you go on Mick Foley's Twitter, Mick Foley puts him over all the time. The guy is great. He throws the best dropkick in the business, in my opinion. He's one of the best workers. He's one of the best on the mic. And there's no reason that this guy shouldn't be feuding with Punk or with Sheamus or you know, in that top level instead of sitting there doing this mid-card stuff with, you know, Brodus Clay and Zack Ryder and all this other crap. You know, and I don't know if you guys watched the Z True Long Island Story, but a couple of weeks ago, Ziggler hacks into the show like he does every week, and he challenges Ryder to a match at WrestleMania 29. It's like, okay, if you're challenging him to a match at WrestleMania 29, that means you're going to be stuck in the mid-card for at least another year. That's just dumb. But, you know, I don't think anything that actually happens on the Z True Long Island Story actually counts towards WWE other than the fans reacting to Zack Ryder.
I think they just got to get him away from Vicky. I've liked the tandem, but I think it's time to move on.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about this, JT?
No, you guys, you're right. I have nothing to add. You guys are both right. I agree with both of you. You know, he's kind of just hovering there. Though I do think he might end up with another title match at the Royal Rumble next year, but, you know, but then again, he'll be back to where he is. But, yeah, he deserves to be up. He definitely deserves to be higher than where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I think Ziggler's probably one of the most talented guys in the company, and he needs to be elevated to that level. And unfortunately, he's not at this point, and hopefully we'll see that soon. I mean, but for right now, he's jobbing out to Brodus Clay on Raw. And, you know, that puts him down at a level with, like, Trent Barretta and Tyler Rex and, you know, those guys that are, you know, not on the show at all, ever. You know?
Yeah.
And that sucks. Any more thoughts on Raw? Anybody?
You kind of know when the tag team champions come out and one guy on the opposing tag team is bigger than both guys combined. You kind of know where that's going.
Yeah,
that's not a surprise. I was actually rather surprised that Tensai actually got the win. Yes, it was kind of tainted. He did get help, but I was actually kind of surprised that Tensai actually went over against John Cena on Monday. I was, you know, we saw Tensai, when I saw him come out, I was like, and especially on the message board, they were like, oh, thank you, Lord Tensai. Now you can finally go back to being Albert, and then Tensai gets the win. You know, I was pretty surprised with that.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really surprised with it because I think they really want to put him over as a monster heel, and what better way to do that than, even if it is a tainted win, a win over John Cena.
Yeah.
I mean, how many guys on this roster can actually say that they've beaten John Cena regardless of the circumstances?
Yeah, no, I agree that that's a pretty big deal, you know, and the fact that the fans are literally, it's like they say, the fans are cheering Daniel Bryan, and WWE doesn't want us to cheer him, yet they want, the fans are crapping on Tensai, and WWE doesn't want us to crap on him, and it's just...
You remember back in the day, it was always like, the fans dictated what they did? I mean, like, they took a guy like Steve Austin, who was a, you know, tremendous talent, and always had been, but never really reached that mid-card or that main event kind of status. And all of a sudden he starts, you know, doing this anti-authority thing and flipping middle fingers, and he's a heel, and the fans start cheering him and cheering him and cheering him. And it got to the point WWE could not ignore him, and he became one of, if not the biggest star in the history of pro wrestling. And the same thing happened with The Rock. The fans crapped all over The Rock. They started making The Rock into a, you know, kind of a jerk, you know, and saying, oh, you know, I'm The Rock, and, you know, fans start chanting, Rocky sucks, Rocky sucks, and they got him over that way. The fans started getting behind The Rock, and the WWE looked at it and said, oh, let's push this guy, you know, and it's Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, a ton of guys, you know, in that era were just because the fans got behind them. And now it's kind of like, and John Cena too, when he was a heel, everybody was getting behind him, cheering for him, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, hey, hey, we got the show coming up in Buffalo. You're going to wrestle Rey Mysterio, but then you're going to turn face. And they never looked back since. John Cena has been one of the biggest stars this industry's ever seen. And the fact remains that it's all because of the fans. And now they're looking at the fans like, why are you cheering for Daniel Bryan? Why aren't you cheering for Lord Tensai, you know, or booing Lord Tensai more instead of just crapping on the gimmick? They are not listening to the fans, and that's a huge mistake, quite honestly.
Well, WWE, we said it before, and then we said it again, the WWE doesn't like their fans. They just, they're at this point, they don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I say they hate the fans in the sense that what we want to see as far as match results and champions and things like that, they won't give us. They'll give us crap like John Laurinaitis being general manager of both shows, even though we can't stand him. And they'll give us crap like Sheamus winning in 18 seconds, even though we love Daniel Bryan, you know? And it's just, but that's what I mean by they hate their fans. But at the same time, now they're starting to, like you said, just not care. They're looking at it like, oh, well, you guys are cheering for this guy. Okay, we'll work harder to make you not like him. And it just blows up in their face because Brian's still the most over guy on the roster right now. I don't know. Speaking of blowing up in faces, TNA had a pay-per-view that we didn't talk about and we're not going to talk about because nobody bothered to watch it. And they only had 2,000 fans in their 9,000-seat arena that they sold out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that they got 2,000 people there. Hell, they last time they came here, which is they've only come here twice, they had like they couldn't even fill out 500 seats.
Yeah, they were here last year for their baseball, and they were trying to have this in the big, you know, major league ballpark that we have. I mean, we don't have a major league team, but we had a ballpark that was designed, at least at the time, for a major league team in Coca-Cola Field downtown here. And yeah, you know, it wasn't they didn't have a huge turnout. You know, they filled up the floor seats, you know, on that's where I was sitting, and then they had a decent turnout. I'd say maybe 1,000, but it wasn't anything, you know, like to brag about. And I think a lot of the people were actually there just because Hogan was there. And they were hoping to get to meet Hogan. Which, of course, if you wanted to meet Hogan and you didn't pre-buy the baseball bat package and all that stuff, you had to pay an extra $80 when you got to the stadium. Go figure, right? But, you know, I mean, I enjoyed myself. I had a good time. I would go back if they did it again this year. But I'm, you know, not, you know, I'm sure they weren't thrilled enough with the turnout where they're going to be like, oh, now we need to go back to Buffalo. But the sad part about this is their pay-per-view was in Nashville, which is where they're based out of, and they couldn't draw. That is sad. I mean, and this is a company that has advertising behind them. They have advertising money. They're putting the money into promoting this. They have ads running on TV. They have a weekly television show promoting this. They have, I'm sure, probably billboards and, you know, ads out in the paper and stuff in Nashville. And they go there and they're only selling 2,000 seats. It's not like it's some indie fed that doesn't have a Facebook or a Twitter and has a 1996 looking website, but and that's it. The fact of the matter is that you know, it says a lot about the company when you're only drawing 2,000 fans in your market, and you're a national wrestling organization. But essentially, apparently, I didn't bother reading the results because I quite honestly didn't care, but I do know that Bobby Roode is still the TNA wrestling champion. I don't know if G can give us some insight on that.
Well, yeah, I can. Here's another interesting fact. His opponent, James Storm, that was his hometown. And they've been building towards this match for about over half a year. So this was supposed to be the payoff. I'm not as critical of this as it sounds like I am, because I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to continue the chase. but it's questionable. There were two. One other interesting event. Eric Bischoff no longer has a name. He lost the rights to his name. How does that work?
You need to explain this to me because I don't.
Boy, I'm glad I dropped that show.
Jeez, what do you mean he doesn't have a name?
He lost the right to his name. The stipulation was they did their Team Garrett, Team Eric ripoff of WrestleMania. They had their stables, I guess, if you will.
Complete with the first name teams.
Yeah. And one of the stips was the loser leaves, and if Team Garrett won, Eric also lost the right to using his name. He lost. So they beeped his name off of on Impact. Whenever they referred to him, they were just beeping his name out. So that is basically all I can explain to you, because this match had all of a week of a build before the pay-per-view, and they announced the teams on the Impact on the go-home show. And there you are.
Oh, man. Hi, my name's Eric Bischoff, but I'm not allowed to call myself Eric Bischoff, even though that's legally my name. It's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's almost as bad as Booker T losing to Big T and not being able to call himself Booker T anymore.
I want my T back! Yeah. I know.
Jeez, and just when I was starting to have faith in this company again and started watching their show again and started recording their show again, this crap happens. I'm glad I haven't been watching.
Well, on one positive note on the show, and again, I fear that they're going to screw this up because that's what they do. They announced, Hogan came out and announced on this Thursday, they're going to do a thing called Open Fight Night, where once a month, somebody who's not on the current roster has the opportunity to come in and challenge somebody for a match. So we can see some old faces or some new faces get the opportunity once a month. The weird thing about it, though, is we're kind of doing it like a kayfabe reality show, like American Idol, where they have judges, and if the three judges deem that the competitor had a good match or whatever, they haven't totally established the criteria, they might sign them to a contract. The other idea is, on Open Fight Night, that any person on the roster can challenge one of the title holders for a title shot, and it can't be refused. The only thing that doesn't make sense about this is why in the hell would you challenge for the television title when the world title guy is the guy you want to go after? That's an obvious criticism. However, the television title will be defended every single week, they say, from here on in. And that is the big news coming out of Impact this week.
So essentially this Open Fight Night, or they're going to have a guy come in and they're going to have judges. This is Hulk Hogan's Celebrity Championship Wrestling, just without the celebrities, is kind of the concept I'm getting. Am I right?
That's the way I'm looking at it, yeah.
Okay. You're absolutely right, though, about, if you have the ability to just say, hey, I want a shot at the world title, why are you going to go after D-Von? Or why are you going to go after, is Austin Aries still the ex-champion? Yeah, why are you going to go after Austin Aries, when you can go after Bobby Roode, And then, at the same time, RVD is now the number one contender for the TNA Championship. So, once a month, regardless of who the number one contender is, somebody else is going to come and wrestle for the championship, just because they feel like it. It's stupid. I'll say it's stupid right now, but I will officially and on the record, I will reserve judgment until I see it played out on television. But on a personal note, I think it's completely stupid right now. But we'll see. JT, any thoughts?
Nope. As far as TNA, nope. I'm glad I stopped watching that. Was it almost 3 years ago? 2 years ago? I don't even remember.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it started getting better, and then all of a sudden it's just like, hey, let's do this! And completely ruin the entire the entire brand. It's just, I don't know.
And we give WWE crap for the, what they put out.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's nothing compared to what these guys do. It's just something, they need something to be done. I mean, I don't know what they need to do. I don't know. Maybe they need to switch. They need to switch TV slots with ROH or something. Because ROH would put on a better product, I'm sure, if they had 2 hours.
Yeah.
But whatever. Any more thoughts on Impact Wrestling for this week?
Well, not really. That's all I got. I had more, but nothing really that was even worth delving into.
Yeah, and I know JT doesn't have anything else for it, so... let's go over to SmackDown, which I was home for, but I did not watch because I was watching hockey. The Pens and the Flyers were playing the other night, which I know is what G is watching right this second, I'm sure, while he's doing this. Game 6. I don't know. G, take us through it, because I didn't watch it or read the review or anything like that.
I actually started watching it at 9. And fast-forwarded it for it, and caught up so quickly through it that I actually watched the main event in its entirety live.
Wow. Like I said, I was watching the Flyers Flyers Penguins game 5, and I checked in to get glue and got my sticker, but that was about it.
Yeah, I saw you got that. I thought maybe you were watching it, but you know, just going on a sticker tirade, that's cool. I do that too sometimes. Basically, we kick the show off with Daniel Bryan. He does a really, really strong promo with AJ talking about his loss, continuing the storyline. And AJ came out trying to, I guess, sort of like apologize as she's been doing lately, and essentially wanting to make up. And Daniel Bryan... this was a segment worth watching, by the way. Daniel Bryan just shuts her down, talks about, he used to have a problem, but he got rid of that problem, and leaves AJ standing in the ring, completely dejected. And I have to give her credit. She's been good lately, but this is probably her best in-ring, performance when it comes to acting. Unfortunately, it was followed up with probably her worst in-ring performance wrestling. she had Natalya as an opponent, and AJ totally is no selling the fact she has a match. She's just staring at the ramp where Daniel Bryan had left. The match starts. Even Natalya's like, AJ, we're supposed to be wrestling, and she goes up to kind of say, it's okay, let's just fight. And then AJ just goes into the classic girly slap, into the corner attack on Natalya, and it was terrible. It was just terrible. And this is certainly where you would fast forward. As a storytelling element, though, it was good, but it totally exposed AJ for her inability to wrestle.
Inability to wrestle, maybe, but if you, I don't know if you saw the pictures, but Natalya posted pictures of her busted up face on Twitter from her match with AJ.
See, I slow fast forward it because I saw her going side on start. Manhandling Natalya, so I kind of rewind it, and I did with my DVR. I get 4 speed, so I usually do it at 2 to fast forward, because that's kind of like the good one. But I did 1 fast forwarded on 1, so I watched pretty much most of the Psycho beatdown. I didn't think it was terrible, but then again, like I said, I did watch it during fast forward, so it was probably normal time was probably terrible. But I was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, it was dramatic. It was just the sloppiness of it, where, you're supposed to not be attempting to hurt your opponent. Natalya seems to have bad luck with that, but they always put her in the ring with models, so there you go.
So essentially, if I go to watch the show right after this podcast, I can go and fast forward this one on 1 and enjoy it more thoroughly than I would if I watched it on real time.
Yeah. And okay. It's very short for a quote-unquote match, and I have a tough time even calling it that. but the actual, talking segment is, I thought, might have been the highlight of the show for me. It was. After that, we got a bit of filler stuff. Damian Sandow cutting a typical promo to his character. If you like the guy's promos, you'll like this. If you don't like the guy's promos, you won't like this.
It was kind of weird.
Yeah, it's really very much a holding pattern for his gimmick. So if you're on the, the train and liking it, you're on the train. It's not going to change your mind if you're not. Or the bandwagon, I should say. The train. What? Anyway, speaking of trains and train wrecks and being
spoiler
derailed,
Spoiler Joe. Hornswoggle is Brodus Clay's brother now.
Oh, God. Really?
But it was... I don't know. Again, if you like Brodus, you're going to love this segment because Hornswoggle went all out and he does the dance better than Brodus. I'm going to say that. I loved this. But I know some people hate it, and the same deal as the Damien Sandow thing. If you don't like Brodus Clay, you're not going to like this segment.
So wait a minute. So Hornswoggle is Brodus Clay's brother now?
Maybe not. He calls him his little brother, quote unquote, but who knows if that,
Yeah, he came out and he goes, I got a new member in the family. Somebody call my brother. And then the two girls come out with Hornswoggle,
So does that mean that if we're calling Brodus Clay's mama, we have to call Finley's wife?
See, I kind of...
All makes sense to me.
I didn't really watch much of it. I did watch I like Hornswoggle. See, the thing that's got me about all this is they're putting Brodus Clay with all guys that I like. Santino, I like Hornswoggle. And I thought Hornswoggle, Hornswoggle did everything better than Brodus Clay. Did the whole dance, and whatnot better. I can't bring myself to like Brodus Clay. I just can't.
I think you might be in the minority on that. You might be in the minority on that. I mean, we had Johnny Gargano on a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, oh, man, I really like Brodus Clay. I like the Funkasaurus gimmick. And I, like, okay, cool. So anybody from WWE? I don't know. I like Brodus Clay to a point, but it's just getting to the point where, okay, I'm tired of squash matches. Can you beat somebody who is credible now? Cleanly. So I don't know. I mean, I'm growing more tired of it by the week, but I'm still a fan. It's probably because I haven't been watching SmackDown. So what else happened?
Well, we got a bunch of stuff. JT, if there's anything we want to pick on or pick apart, go for it, man.
Well, I wish I grabbed a snack like Georgie Animal Snail, but I'm trying to lose a little weight, but. I just saw we cut to Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. And I'm like, oh God, these guys are, and they were terrible when they were mocking Taylor. I just thought they were horrible. They were just, okay, I can understand why you guys went back to NXT.
Yeah, well, I gotta tell you something real quick. You could have grabbed a snack like George the Animal Steel. I mean, those turnbuckle pads are almost like rice cakes.
I always used to think it was popcorn.
Yeah, it looks like it. It sure does look like it, but I think it's more like rice cakes, and that's how George the Animal Steel keeps his trim figure. moving on.
Well, speaking of NXT, guys, Matt Stryker is interviewing Kane about the whole murdering of Orton and his family
It was the Raw that the Stooges were in.
Right. But the funny thing is, Matt Stryker just finally was freed from being kidnapped for 3 weeks on NXT, which is a bizarre universe within itself lately. If you're not watching NXT lately, that's your decision, and I don't mind that because it's on the internet and I understand that. But that show is quite a work. It's becoming more interesting as each episode goes by over the last, I'd say, month and a half. It's just because it's such its own confined universe, with its characters becoming more and more developed, that I think I'm enjoying it lately more, and not just skipping through the talking segments for the Tyson Kidd and Michael McGillicuddy match that I usually would do. But Matt Stryker was kidnapped and freed. We'll get to that a little bit in the news, because there's a part of the episode of NXT that I think is actually quite a work. and might lead to somebody getting called up, not just Darren Young or Titus O'Neil. Got the Uso brothers versus those guys. It was a shitty match. It's part of my language, as JT pointed out. Great. After that, oh, go ahead.
Now I'm going to have to go back and edit the show. We're trying to keep this clean rating here on iTunes.
Yeah. I get away with that word in Canada. I forget sometimes.
I would say something, but I don't want people searching through. I'll just say this much. Shush. But yeah, no, I didn't even watch the match. I saw them come out. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I know who's winning this, so it's just fast forward.
Yeah.
Big Show, Alberto Del Rio. Pretty generic match. Cody Rhodes had a run-in, costs Big Show the match. Del Rio goes over. Enough said, at least from my point of view on that one. Then we got Ryback versus Danny Merman. Straight out of the ocean. Local worker, jobber Merman. Got a couple of words in, but they edited him down even quicker than any of the jabronis we've had. It was exactly the same thing we've seen with Ryback for the last 3 weeks now. People backstage watching and laughing, and Ryback squashing and eating another guy. So there you go.
Yeah, but the thing is, this was by far Ryback's longest match to date, a whopping minute and a half long.
True.
Why? Okay. Another thing I don't understand, why is Heath Slater trying? I know he's the one man Southern Rockman, but why is he trying to look like Kid Rock?
My name is Heath! Go ahead.
Oh, and before we go on, I see you mentioned Luxembourg in your review. Luxembourg hate Cena.
Yeah,
I think it was 7th or 8th grade I did a report on Luxembourg. I was like, and you're like, yeah, that's a pretty tiny country.
Yeah, I made a little jab at them. I'm like, well, how many of their fan, notice I didn't pluralize that. Like, it's so tiny.
I think it's smaller than Rhode Island.
That sounds about right. we had an Antonio Cesaro sighting. First time on SmackDown or Raw, for that matter. I guess he may or may not be involved with Oksana and possibly playing into that storyline. I don't know. We didn't hear a lot from Teddy Long this week because he was given the beef eater duties and he had to wear the traditional Queen's Guard hat and say nothing all night long.
Yes. Yeah, that was awesome. I have to say that him doing that, he was so good. He was awesome at that.
Yeah, he looked genuinely pissed off. Very angry from Teddy Long. Good facial expressions.
And he's just standing there having to take it.
You know, I'm glad there was a Claudio Castagnoli sighting on the show because I completely forgot to send the Davey Vega highlights to my other computer so I could play the highlights on this show. So continue talking about SmackDown while I do that.
All right. Well, we get down to our main event for the most part. Sheamus, Randy Orton, and the Great Khali versus Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, and Cody Rhodes. I thought the match was okay. It was longer than most of the other action on the show, but it didn't do a heck of a lot for me. I think a big part of that was I was just really exhausted when I finally got to it. But I know JT said he watched it real time, so I'll pass it over to you for some thoughts on it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was all right. It was even better when Cody Rhodes took out Khali and we got the Big Show instead. So I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, you know, other than, you know, Orton and his getting the win, but that's about it. I guess that's SmackDown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always good when you get somebody else, regardless of who it is, than the great Kali, I'm sure. I mean, you know, the guy is an impressive human being as far as size and everything goes, but he's a terrible worker. It's just horrible to try and watch one of the guy's matches.
Well, if you watch, he can barely walk. But I think you know, I know everybody has the one leg is slightly bigger than the other one, but I think he's got one that's a lot bigger than the other one because you can tell he can barely walk coming to the ring.
Yeah, that's actually we had that discussion with Johnny Gargano a couple of weeks ago. You can find that on iTunes, and you can find it right here on BoardWrestlingFan.com if you're so inclined to search for it. All right. Anything else on SmackDown?
No, that's it.
Yeah, we got, I think, everything.
All right. Well, then, in that case, yesterday, Justin Ruff sat down with independent worker Davey Vega, and that interview is going to be available tomorrow right here on BoardWrestlingFan.com and also on our iTunes page. And I happen to have the... I happen to have a very short teaser of that before we get into any news, so without further ado, let me get that up for you.
I started off in St. Louis with St. Louis Anarchy. At the time, they were actually called LWA, or Lethal Wrestling Alliance. That's where I made... that's basically where... I wouldn't say I made my name, but that's where I started off at in St. Louis. I didn't know anything about Texas Anarchy until I was actually booked there. And then when I was booked there, I slowly started to realize, like, Texas Anarchy was the place to be. Yeah, Beyond Wrestling, like, I started there in... I was on their very first shows back in 2009. And it was... It's definitely different than your normal show, obviously, because you don't have any fans. You're wrestling in front of your peers and all the other wrestlers. I faced them, both of them, a few times, but Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly, probably two of the top people that I enjoy wrestling. Like, it's just, I learned so much from them, and they're up there when it comes to wrestling. In February, it was me and Fitchett versus Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly. There's a lot of talk around St. Louis saying it's the best tag team match that they've seen in the area ever, period.
All right, again, that's Davey Vega, the voice of Davey Vega there. In local, he's an independent wrestler throughout the country. He's done Chikara, AAW, AIW, and you've heard, you know, some of the other ones he mentioned there, Beyond Wrestling, Texas Anarchy, St. Louis Anarchy. Justin had a nice little 25-minute chat with him tomorrow. That's going to go up tomorrow. Yesterday he had the chat with him. It's going to go up tomorrow on the site, and I'm all discombobulated. I woke up like an hour before the show and had to go to the store and buy food and eat and rush over here to get on the show. So that's why I'm kind of like out of it today. So anyway, so what's happened this week in the news? Gee, any news you'd like to give us? Because like I said, I'm like unorganized today.
It's time for the news, people.
And should I get you a little news brief sound clip thing? Maybe the old MTV News one. Just play some Megadeth.
That would be cool, actually. A little typewriter sound effect or something, too. Telegraph. Let's go back in time.
The old IRS theme from the video games.
Yeah, we had some interesting things this week, but nothing super over the top. There was this girl, Rima, I think it was pronounced Rima Faki.
The Miss America.
Yes, the one that was the whole Donald Trump kerfuffle a while back. She may or may not be coming into the company. She said in one interview she's not with the company, but then in an interview pretty much immediately after it, she said she will definitely be part of the WWE. Great. Another model is signed up to be a diva in the WWE. I hope this starts a meh chant. That's what we need for these models turned wrestlers. You guys have any other thoughts or added sarcasm? Because I just think, in the words of the great Charles Barkley, this is terrible.
She was on Tough Enough, and she lasted a little while. It wasn't very long, and I don't really recall how she was in the ring. So I'm honestly kind of not caring either way.
Yeah, me either. I don't even know who this female is. I didn't watch Tough Enough, and I don't watch Miss America, so she's really nothing to me.
Exactly.
Her backstory on Tough Enough, I do remember it now. Her backstory was she had never wrestled before, so you know how this is going to end.
Right.
Yeah. And so since the Bella Twins were scheduled to be leaving at the end of the London tapings apparently this week, because there's a replacement, we got another one of them. Yay! Just give us Sarah Del Rey, please, for the love of all things.
Right? Well, as far as the Bella Twins go, I'll just say the same thing I said about the Detroit Red Wings the other day. Na 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 na, na 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 na, hey hey hey, goodbye.
All right. Well, I alluded to this a bit earlier. I have been following NXT recently, and the whole storyline with the kidnapping of Matt Stryker was played out, and it was Tyler Rex and Kurt Hawkins who were responsible for it, and they had a loser gets fired match, and Rex won, but, you know, good old William Regal's like, I'm firing both of you anyway. Now, I'm pretty sure this is kayfabed, in part because these guys are actually wrestling this weekend in house shows. Sorry, or overseas. And although the Kurt Hawkins said on Twitter, I'm so fired, I'm going to kill at Kill Steen Kill and at Sammy Callahan in the Indies. But another interesting little thing to note is Kurt Hawkins was the guy that was working with The Rock to get him ready for WrestleMania a couple Sundays ago. I think this is just a way to get them off NXT. And I have a feeling, at least with Hawkins, that... And I don't mind Hawkins, because he's actually a good worker.
Absolutely.
He might get repackaged and brought up with one of the main shows in the near future. But you guys have any thoughts on Hawkins or Rex? Or if this is an internet work, or if I'm, like, way off? I don't know. I could be. JT, any thoughts?
Go ahead, JT.
It's NXT. Anything can happen.
I'd actually like to see the Kurt Hawkins try and go after Kevin Steen.
or Callahan, for that matter. Both great workers.
I think Steen would just kind of, like, stick his fist. It would be like, you know, Hawkins would be running at him. Steen would just, like, stick his fist out and knock him out.
That's why Living on the Edge came on. I went to my local wrestling... My local indie promotion, because I thought I saw Kevin Steen was in it, and he's actually on the roster, so... And the Briscoes are the champions, I guess. So, I don't know.
It's possible. What else?
Okay. I got a fuzzy, happy story. It's always good to have a couple of those, because we can be a little... You know, we try to be pretty optimistic on the show. Well, I know it's easier for some of us than others. I'm notably a pessimist and smart aleck. But I like this one. Kazarian cut his hair, and it was part of a storyline, which we could gripe about. But the thing he did was he donated it all to a charity called Locks of Love, which makes wigs for cancer patients. I think the new look is... I was really hating it at first. It doesn't, but when I found out why he did it, now it turned me around completely, 180 on it. I think it's awesome when guys, especially the guys who aren't getting the attention that they deserve on TNA, surprise, still have managed to give back, and that's awesome.
Yeah, when I cut my hair, I was gonna go I was gonna donate it, but the problem with that was. They won't take hair if it's been processed or dyed or anything like that. And my hair had been bleached, dyed, you know, all kinds of crap like that. So I couldn't. But my Youngest brother-in-law was over my house the other day. Wow, it was a week ago, actually. And he's sitting there, and he's got really long hair. He says, I'm thinking of cutting it. And, you know, we all kind of tried to steer him in that direction. And I think that's what he's going to do. I think actually he was the one that mentioned he wanted to do it for Locks of Love. And I told him, hey, as long as your hair's not processed, he said, never done anything with it. So yeah. He's going to donate. But, yeah, it's absolutely a good cause. If you have the long hair and you want to cut it and you haven't dyed it or processed it or absolutely fried and destroyed it, it's a good cause and definitely something to ask your local barber shop about, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know my girlfriend did it when she cut her hair. Like, I know she doesn't have short hair, but her hair was a lot longer. I know, Joe, you've met her. Her hair's pretty short now, but it was like halfway down her back at one point. But when she cut it to her shoulders, she donated all of it. And I don't remember if the charity was around when I had long hair, because I had long hair way back in high school in the mid 90s. So when I got a cut, I don't remember if they had offered it to me. But I would have given it if I had the chance.
Yeah, I mean, I actually went to a barber shop for the first time in years when I got my hair cut. And the lady that cut my hair said, man, you know, it's too bad you dyed your hair because we could have donated this to Locks of Love. And I said, man, I just liked the look when I dyed it. I wasn't thinking about I'm going to cut this eventually and want to maybe donate it. And I think if I grow my hair back, which right now I'm still debating, you know, there's always the possibility of I might just grow it back just to cut it again and donate it because I couldn't the last time. But that's a decision that's a ways off. What else?
Yeah, plus you have to have at least, I think I heard it was at least 4 inches to donate.
Yeah. I thought it was like a foot, but it probably not, because I don't think mine was a foot long.
Okay. Another little chuckle one from Twitter. The actor, and I don't know his name, and honestly, nor do I care, that plays Larry in The Three Stooges, actually slammed the WWE saying he was embarrassed to be on Raw. So, of course, Punk, the great wisdom that he has on Twitter, says, holy crap, so the douche who's playing Larry in the Stooges movie says he was embarrassed to be on Raw, but he's in the Stooges movie? And I got a chuckle out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I did catch the... I caught the news report about the guy saying that he was embarrassed to have been on Raw, but I didn't catch the CM Punk thing until I just read it right now on the little thread we got going on in the at our secret group on Facebook. Ooh, I wasn't supposed to say that. It's a secret.
Uh-oh. Rule number one. Okay.
The first rule of Board Wrestling Fans Facebook group is you do not talk about Board Wrestling Fans Facebook group as I sit in a room surrounded by Fight Club artwork and posters.
Yeah. Well, I
microphone.
Take some of the hate that's getting... Being from what I'm hearing about how bad the Stooges movie is, so he's probably just trying to get some of that, I don't know, bad thought, brain fart.
Is this really news? This next thing, I mean, is this because I've heard about this a while ago, actually?
Yeah, I don't know how recently it was reported, but I just tossed it in there because it grabbed my eye, but it isn't the most groundbreaking news. It's just about Our Lady Peace finally retiring the whatever theme song that used to be Benoit's entrance.
I'm amazed that Our Lady Peace is still together.
Our Lady Peace is still together. They're still touring. They're still, I think they're still writing music and recording albums. And here's the thing, though, is I've seen Our Lady Peace a couple of times. I absolutely love the band. I know G called them one of Canada's crappiest bands for sake of a clean rating.
Really?
I'm sorry, I'm not a fan, but we call it peace.
But you said you got much love for them, so
I thought they were up there. See, I was a fan. I'm not gonna hate. I'm a fan. I would say I'm a fan of their music. I've got up to their the last album I bought from them was in 2006. I was under the impression that everybody loved up in Canada loved Our Lady Peace.
Oh, they're very popular up here. I don't know if I'm in the minority or majority. I mean, we've got a lot of different, you know, genres, but they're really over up here.
They're too busy listening to the Tragically Hip, eh?
I was gonna ask.
At least they write songs about hockey, so.
Yeah. Bill Barilko disappeared.
I need to ask this. I already know your opinion of the Our Lady piece because I asked this before. I asked the question before. The question is, who's the best up there in Canada? Is it Our Lady piece, the Tragically Hip, or the Bare Naked Ladies?
Oh God.
For popularity overall, I think that's a great question. I think that the Tragically Hip probably has the most loyal fan base, and it's pretty big. Bare Naked Ladies is surprisingly popular up here, too. I'm not a huge fan of them. And Our Lady Peace, I think, is... they're probably all pretty close, to be honest with you. Just go on the record. My biggest issue with Our Lady Peace is really just the style of the vocals and the squeaking style that he uses. It's just, to me, it's a turnoff. There's a couple tracks here and there I do like by Our Lady Peace, though. I won't say I totally hate them. And I can say that about all three of those bands, actually. When Bare Naked Ladies actually broke through, before they really got major world notoriety, they had some good songs. There's interesting different band among the grunge and punk-dominated mainstream music that we were getting at the time.
Because I used to have Much Music when I had DirecTV way back when DirecTV first came out back in the mid-90s. And, you know,
that's before Much Music USA became Fuse.
No, this wasn't even...
It was actual, like, the Canadian...
This was actual Much Music. This
from
was
Canada,
so
okay.
I know a lot of... I saw the biggest three bands in, like, 1996 were, like... The Barely Naked Ladies, Tragically Hip, and Our Lady Peace up in Canada. And it was like, and this was all before, you know, Our Lady Peace broke down here and the Bare Naked Ladies got big down here. So I was just, I just always wondered, you know, it's just always one of the things that's been on my mind.
Well, JT, I mean, you and I both know who the best band in Canada actually is. Anvil.
I would say.
Go ahead.
I would say they're the best band.
I know. They're a great band, though. I saw them last year with Alice Cooper. So.
there's a band I haven't actually heard of, but maybe I should check them out later on.
Absolutely.
The story of Anvil.
The story of Anvil. It was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is or if you'd be able to get it in Canada. It was produced by VH1. And Anvil is actually this band that was, like, you know, one of the big 80s, like, thrash metal bands, and all the other bands were ripping them off and got more famous. It's almost like a real life version of the original story of Fozzy. I saw these guys in concert last year, and I immediately went on Facebook while I'm watching them, and I said, you know, why didn't these guys get huge? They're so heavy. They're so good. But anyway, back to the story. I actually was talking to an Our Lady Peace fan just a while ago. I think I had mentioned something about the song Whatever on Facebook, and my friend who has seen Our Lady Peace like 300 times and you know, loves them and goes to see them every time they come to Buffalo or wherever, anywhere close to here. He says, you know, they don't even acknowledge that song even exists anymore. And this was a while ago. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, this story came out where, oh, Our Lady Peace has retired the song, Whatever. I'm like, yeah, I already knew that. So I don't know how long ago they actually retired it, but I would imagine, you know, I mean, just given what the guitar player said, Steve Mazur, he said, I couldn't imagine singing that, to be honest. It's so tied to him and the tragedy that happened, I just couldn't get it out of my head. I mean, that just says to me, like, they've retired this song 5 years ago, and, you know, the news sites are just now picking up on it.
Yeah, I like remember. I remember when I saw it the last time I saw him live, and they played that song. This was like 10 years ago, and they came right out and they were like defending him. They were like so proud that they were singing that song for him because it's like, you know, he's one of the only real wrestlers and, you know, yeah, this, I mean, and that and this and that, you know.
I saw them when they first wrote the song. He was still out with an injury, and they're like, oh, this is for our boy Chris, who's injured right now. He's a WWF wrestler, and, you know, the song's called Whatever. It's a cool song, man. I like the song, and, you know, it still plays regularly on my Google Music player on my phone. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, that's something you don't really want to tie yourself to, is something as horrible as the Benoit tragedies, you know, which I think, to an extent, you know, board wrestling fan can trace itself back to around that time period, but, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, hey, I decided to start a website after Chris Benoit killed his family and himself. That's not the true story, by the way.
It happened because of Vince McMahon blowing up in a limo.
Exactly, so. Yeah.
Yes. We rewrite our own history here, folks.
No, the
just like
no, the actual truth is, I went to WrestleMania 24. I won tickets from a website, and they wanted me to do a you know, overview or review of the live experience of WrestleMania. And that after I did that, I kind of said, you know, I think I can make my own wrestling website. And then I drew it up and I sent it to JT, and JT was the first person to ever see it or know about it, and here we are 4 years later doing the Board Wrestling Fan Radio every week. Anyway, what else?
Well, if you want to bother getting into this one, I don't know. Scott Steiner is hilarious on Twitter. He's been ripping on Garrett and Hogan lately. I can't really quote much of this. Keep it clean. So I'm re-looking at it again, and I'm like, wow, there's profanity in like every third word. This is like Eddie Murphy's stand-up from Raw. His own Raw.
Yeah.
But I also agree with almost everything he says, even though it's profanity-laced. I think Steiner is probably out now. I don't know where he's going to go, which is a shame because the guy still works a great promo when they gave him the opportunity to do so. He's been off television for a couple months.
Well, I mentioned earlier, I went to that base brawl they did last year, and the main event was Steiner versus Angle with Hogan as the enforcer on the outside. And the only guy on the entire show that got to cut a promo aside from Don West was Scott Steiner. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Okay, well, you know, Garrett's response to it was pretty predictable from the guy whose daddy's pushing him to the moon. He's basically calling him a negative vote. Negative people only trying to drag him down to the negative level because they don't know how to rise up to your level. Well, if it comes to wrestling ability, that's pretty easy. That's what, a step? Is that one step? Half a step, maybe? Put your foot kind of up there and then just kind of put it back down and not even move? That's my comeback to Garrett, even though, you know, he's probably not going to hear this, so I should make sure I make an MP3 of it and send it to his Twitter.
Scott Steiner, despite his, last 10, 15 years or so, I mean, the guy is a accomplished amateur wrestler, you know? And, I mean, regardless of what Garrett Bischoff does in his career, he's never going to be a draw like Scott Steiner would be. You know, not saying that Steiner's one of the top guys that I would book for a show, you know what I mean? But if I had him on a show and I had Garrett Bischoff on the same show, I would be pushing Steiner way more than I'd be pushing Bischoff as far as the promotional material goes. Bischoff doesn't have a lot of experience, and he needs to go back to school, pretty much. He's not a great worker, and he's, you know, getting over on his name. And I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago we mentioned, hey, you know, he can't get rid of that tattoo, so what's he going to do? He's always stuck being Bischoff, unless he wears a shirt. I don't know. Whatever.
Hulk Hogan. It is what it is. I agree 100%.
Hulk Hogan on Scott Steiner. If he really believes what he's saying, I feel bad for everybody close to him. His future was much greater than this, brother.
What should I do?
He also tells YouTube that James Storm needs to, quote, put a bullet, unquote, into Bobby Roode. So, next week on Impact, James Storm is going to shoot Bobby Roode on live television. Well, taped television.
I'd tune in for that.
I would, too. And then Joseph Park could represent Bobby Roode in his... no, he could represent James Storm. You know, it was self-defense. I don't know. Is that all the news? I mean, jeez. This is slow.
I'm looking at the last minute, any breaking news, and nothing's popping out here. Chrissy Hemme got her house invaded last night by bleeping druggy burglars in her house. That's not a very good way to wake up. CM Punk will be singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the 7th inning stretch of a Cubs game on May 8th.
Oh, that ought to be fun. I like Punk, but he's not much of a singer. Let's see. Got a couple of things. Let's see. This I read about yesterday. Actually, both of these I read about yesterday. A fan who attended WrestleMania was given free tickets by WWE to the next two different live events in his hometown. The fan states that at WrestleMania, his line of sight, as well as that of his father and his brother, was obscured by the palm trees the company was using as part of the ringside decorations. As a result, WWE has reimbursed him with the tickets. Furthermore, the fan's father, who lives in Long Island, received two tickets as well, while his brother, who lives in Palm Springs, California, received two tickets to this year's SummerSlam. So, if you go to a WWE pay-per-view and you can't see, you'll get free tickets.
Hey, that's good. You know, you can't, you know, you can make your customers happy, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I guarantee you, even wherever they were sitting, you know, WrestleMania seats aren't that cheap.
No. Oh, I paid $18 for my WrestleMania 19 seats, but...
Well, yeah, but there were. I know there were. Granted, yeah, you know what? True. I think there are cheap seats, but you sit
in a stadium as big as they hold WrestleMania in. The cheap seats are just that. They are cheap seats.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, WrestleMania 19. You know, we had a decent view from where we were. We were all the way up in the upper deck of Safeco Field. We could see the ring just fine. We could see all the action. We couldn't really see the entrance. And they had that stupid pillow fight thing with what was it, like Stacy Keibler and the Miller Lite girls or whatever. And we couldn't see any of that stuff, which is like irrelevant. But we could see the ring just fine, and it was WrestleMania, so that was the point. It was being able to see the ring, and we could see Limp Bizkit okay from wherever we were sitting. You could take that as a good or a bad thing, depending on your opinion. But
what year was it? Was it 19? So what would it be? Was that what?
It was 2003. It was the lineup with without West Borland.
Yeah, that was. Didn't they have one of the guys from Korn play guitar?
Head was playing with them. Yeah.
Yeah, they were. They were god awful then.
The performance was not bad. The two performances they performed the unreleased song "Crack Addict," and then they played the Undertaker to the ring. They played Roland.
Well, my thing with Limp Bizkit is like I think they really only had one good record, which was Significant Other, and they kind of just were here for a few minutes. You know, they were good from about late 98 when Faith was released to early 2000 till the second Fred Durst took the stage with Christina Aguilera, and after that they've been
I like the better Limp Bizkit's older stuff too. I'm not afraid to admit it.
I have all of their albums except for the new one, Gold Cobra, and I listen to them regularly because I'm actually a fan, but that's what I'm saying. You know, you could take it as a good thing or a bad thing depending on your thoughts.
I have $3 Bill, I have Significant Other, and I have Chocolate Starfish. I have all three of those, but, you know, like I say, the only the only really, in my opinion, the only really good album was Significant Other, because for me, $3 Bill was the first. I liked the first couple songs I liked, and I liked Faith, and the rest of it was forgettable. And there was about half, I'd say about half of Chocolate Starfish, which was good, and the other half was just, it was what it was, people.
The album I always point people to when it comes to Limp Bizkit is The Unquestionable Truth, Volume 1, because they think they're Rage Against the Machine on that album.
Yeah, I heard that.
But it's really good. It's really cool stuff from Fred and the rest of the guys. I really like that album, and I point to that every time anybody's like, oh, Limp Bizkit sucks. Like, here, this album's a half hour long. Listen to it.
But yeah, back to what we were talking about. I've actually been in a stadium in the very last row. In fact, actually, in our stadium here in Syracuse, the Carrier Dome, I was for an SU basketball game. I was sitting in the very last row in front of an air conditioning duct.
Oh.
It was 20 degrees outside. And I could see the game, but all they were just little dots.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, you can tell what's going on, and especially, like, at a WrestleMania, they make sure everybody can see the ring, or at least they, on a regular basis, normally they would make sure everybody can see the ring, and if you can't see the ring, they have the big screens up above the ring that you can watch it on, and, you're there to watch the action in the ring, your eye will be drawn up to the screen occasionally, but, we kind of, we're watching, and that's how we thought Brock pretty much killed himself at that WrestleMania. But, the fact of the matter is we could see, so it wasn't like WWE had to make up for anything. We only paid $18 for the seats. I'm sure wherever they were sitting, because those palm trees were freaking huge.
Yeah.
Wherever they were sitting, they probably paid decent money for those seats, which would, of course, lead to WWE having to do something about it. I mean, if they paid $18 like I did for WrestleMania, in 19, they would have just, WWE would have been like, here's your $20 back, And then the other bit of news that I got was, this comes from Steve Austin in the Sun newspaper. This is CM Punk the one for him to return against in WrestleMania 29? Maybe Punk's not the guy to go against. He needs to pick up his intensity. We'll have to see what I do. I'm happy doing what I am. In a perfect world where I could step back into the ring for one last match, I would be willing to have that discussion with management. I do miss the business and working a live crowd, going out there and wrestling your hearts out. So, right now, Steve Austin is saying no to a match with CM Punk. So, any thoughts?
Believe it. I'll believe the no when I don't get the match.
All right,
I could see if his criticism is legit and honest where he's coming from. I think the rumors started just after the Summer of Punk 2, where he was talking about wanting to face him, and that was a much different incarnation of the CM Punk characters we know him right now. Not to say Punk's lost a lot of ground, but he's a face now. He's basically has to water it down for his role a little bit. Granted, his intensity levels, I would argue, is rather high over the last couple of weeks. We've talked about that angle quite a bit. But if I was in Austin's shoes, I wouldn't want to come back and risk an injury with my neck in any way, other than to be facing, somebody with the most amount of heat and excitement as possible. And there's certainly not the same level of it right now that there was last summer. So, I understand his point of view then, I guess.
Yeah. There was more to that Mick Foley and Dean Ambrose thing. Now that I think about it, let me see if I can find what I wanted to read. Just take a second. But I know there was more to it. If I can't find it, I'll give you the gist of it, but it should be here somewhere. Ambrose. Oh, I guess it's not on here. Basically, the gist of it is Mick Foley tweeted that he would not, you know, that this originally was supposed to be like a work, and it was supposed to get Dean Ambrose over for when he comes up to the main roster. But Foley asked him to do one thing, which was, you know, keep my kids out of your tweets. And Ambrose continued to tweet about Mick Foley's kids. And Mick pretty much said, well, you know, I'm not going to come back and work with this guy. Forget this. I don't, you know, if I can't trust him to not talk about my kids in a tweet when I asked him not to and he said he wouldn't, you know, how am I going to trust him with my life in the ring? I'm not going to, you know, if he wants, if he's got people in high places that are behind him, good for him, but I'm not one of them. So that's the latest on that Foley and Dean Ambrose thing. I thought I saw it somewhere. I don't know what happened to the... I don't know where it went, so, yeah, it's nowhere on the site I'm looking at. Maybe I should go to angrymarks.com, the official news site of boardwrestlingfan.com, in some capacity, I don't know.
There's lots of sources out there, but this one I didn't catch. They might have it on their site. It's been a long week.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is part of the work or not. Again, if it's truthful and that was the agreement from the get-go, well, Ambrose, I guess you just blew an opportunity to get over by one of the most famous wrestlers of the last 10, 15, 20 years. If it's part of the work and they're just building towards it, I guess that's 10%ers, quote-unquote, by beep, because he lost his name. He coined the term.
Here we go, well, I found it.
More fuel to the fire, I suppose. Was there any retort from Ambrose about this at all? Or
I don't know, but I did find the full quote from Mick Foley. It says, "Look, I've been accused from time to time of taking some things in the business a little too seriously. Maybe I do, but like that sailor man of old, I am what I am, and that's all that I am. After all these years, there are some things that just bother me." Remember that Kane Dewey promo from 1995 that so many are still fond of? It actually came from a very heavy place in my heart when my wife impressed on me how sick it was for any fan to be making a sign advocating the beating, even in jest, of my 3-year-old child. That's the immediate feeling I got when I actually read the Dean Ambrose tweet that mentioned his dream to seeing me no longer able to make a dime in the wrestling business, with a particularly nasty mention of how he wanted to see my home repossessed and my children starved. Maybe the 1995 Cactus Jack would have cut a promo on the guy. The 2102 Mick Foley, that's what it says on this site, I don't know if that's actually what Mick wrote, just wonders what would make somebody say something so stupid, heartless, and ignorant. I felt Dean Ambrose had crossed a line that shouldn't be crossed, so I took the opportunity before the Hampton, Virginia SmackDown to ask or tell him to please stop crossing a line that I wasn't comfortable with. Ric Flair had once asked me a similar question. Had once asked a similar consideration of me before a memorable promo which we shared in New Jersey in 2006. Of course I honored his request. Ours is a business based on trust and respect. I thought Dean Ambrose understood this. But less than a day after making my request, I saw that my children were once again a subject of his tweets, a reference to how I might feel differently about something if my children were in wheelchairs. Maybe I would have cut a huck of a promo about it in 1995. 17 years later, I just wanted to get the F away from the whole scenario. It's not fun. It's not cutting edge. It just sucks. So there you go. That's Mick Foley on Dean Ambrose. But I don't know if there was any kind of retort on this. I don't know if Mick just probably might have just dropped the whole thing. But as far as right now, I mean, that didn't sound like a work. That sounded like, you know, Mick Foley coming from the heart saying, don't talk about my kids, don't talk about my kids, don't talk about my kids, and, you know, we'll be cool, but he keeps talking about Mick's kids, and Mick doesn't want to work with him. I could be wrong. It could be a work. I don't know. JT, what do you think?
Yeah, could be a work.
All right, G, what do you think?
Oh, I kind of have still the same sentiment. I don't trust the internet at all. I don't trust being worked without the pre-internet era. and I don't mind that. A little bit of stuff I found was, I guess, Ambrose on Twitter did say from a fan that whether or not he would take out Foley, he responded, "I won't." He took himself out. And then there's also some news about Dean Ambrose cutting a promo on William Regal over the last day in FCW. So perhaps there is some truth there, and they're shifting the program over to Regal. And yeah. That actually could be a good program, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, Regal with anybody is a good would be a good program.
He could wrestle a hologram.
Yeah.
Oh no! Do not go there.
I knew we're yeah. I you could go there if you'd like. It's my show.
I was sick of that. Not even 24 hours after that YouTube debut.
Look, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Tupac Shakur is not dead. Look, the guy put out 6 albums since he died.
Yeah, I know.
His video that came out the day after he died featured him dying and going to heaven. His video for the song Changes, which came out like 3 years, 4 years after he died, he's walking down the street rapping the song, if you look closely enough.
Yeah, but the thing is my brother had a bunch of his records.
Yeah.
I think Changes was a song that was put together through a lot of, because I heard a lot of those lyrics and Changes that were in some of his other songs. I'm not saying
okay,
but I am saying, like, I think Changes, they kind of, like, because like I said, my brother had some of his record, had some of the CDs, so I think, you know, there was some of the lyrical, like, I know that the one lyric, "Both White and Black are smoking crack tonight," was in one of his other songs. That I know that because I heard that in another one of his songs. So
all right, and the newest proof I have is Tupac's hologram comes up on stage, right? What up, Dre? What up, Snoop? What up, Coachella? Coachella Music Festival started 3 years after Tupac was shot and killed. I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it because this is a audio program, but you know. So, I mean, you know, it could be Hollywood magic. It could be a guy that sounds like Tupac doing it, but I still am of the mindset that the guy never really died. But, you know, here we are, we're metalheads on a wrestling program talking about Tupac.
Tupac life.
Yep.
Now, here, but the thing is, it got me with my here, the morning radio show I listened to, and they've really gone overboard with it. The whole morning I was listening to it, they just kept playing Tupac talking, you know, the whole, and then when Dick Clark died, it was Dick Clark the whole morning. Oh, and boy. it's like, okay, this is Dick.
Oh boy. I was shocked when I heard Dick Clark died. I always thought that dude was a robot. I never really thought he was human. He never aged, man. It was just like, dude, he still looks like he did on the $25,000 pyramid.
I was amazed as he was as young as he was. I thought he was at least 10 years older. I thought he was like in his 90s. I didn't think he was actually 82.
No. No, I completely, I mean, I just, you know, he was like ageless, though. That's the thing, is like, wow. You didn't think that guy was going to die. You thought he was a robot and he was going to live forever. But, you know, now you got all the memes coming out on the internet. You know, Dick Clark died. How can we have New Year's Eve without Dick Clark? The Mayans were right. Whatever. All right. Anybody want to add anything else before we go?
I got nothing else to say, I think, for this week.
Yeah, me either. Not that I said much to begin with, but...
Right. All right, then, in that case... For G-Hall, JT, and myself, Think So Joe, this has been Board Wrestling Fan Radio, episode 19. Stick around for tomorrow's interview with Davey Vega. Tomorrow noon, it'll be up on the site. It'll be on iTunes a little bit later. Speaking of iTunes, give us a good rating. Let people know we're out here. Follow us on Facebook. Like us on Twitter, or the other way around. And we'll see you next week.
If you look for the interviews on that they just get put up, you might have to look down a little bit because they don't go in order.
Ah. All right. Well, you heard them, folks. We'll see you next week. And the intro music's, outro music's already done. So, good night, everybody.
Night.
Later.